Success Match Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
This is indeed the Brad Sesmatch Show. Good morning. My name is Paula Bovin. I am with Paul Coro. We are both from AZ Central Sports, and we are filling in for Brad Sesmatch, who is not here today. But that's all right. I'm glad I've got Coro in town with me for once. He's been sitting there in the arena watching a bunch of guys shooting jump shots, so I'm glad I brought him in here. And we're going to get into a lot of basketball, but I want to let you know what's going on in the world of sports, brought to you by Santan Ford. Santan Ford, where it's all about you. Stop into Santan Ford for their great variety and selection on new or certified pre-owned vehicles. Just off the 202 in Val Vista, Santan Ford, where it's all about you. But really, it's all about you, Paul Cora. How you doing?
I feel like I should sing a jingle.
Do you know a few? Can you go ahead?
Nobody wants to hear me sing.
Well, this is the perfect day to talk about hoops and to talk about arenas, because Paul Coro's here with us. Let's get to hoops, though. Warriors win last night, Paul, 103-82. That series is tied 2-2. Game 5 Sunday in Oakland. Is this series gone where you thought it might?
Not at all. I mean, I think I was on the boat with everybody else that once you see Kyrie Irving writhing in pain and being helped off, that there went their last chance. You know, they already were without Love. But the way they reinvented themselves and became this grinding, ugly, muck-it-up defensive team, they kind of took Memphis's template but had LeBron James to do it. And so then I gave them every chance to be in the series. But the Warriors flipped that last night. They got back to their style. Steph looks free again. Guys like Draymond and Green and Harrison Barnes were filling their roles again, and the Cavs just don't have that depth. They had Timofey Mozgov's best night ever last night and still got blown out.
Yeah, it was crazy. I want to remind people, by the way, that we're streaming live on sports360az.com and azcentralsports.com, so you can find us in two places. All right, a name very familiar in Arizona, Andre Iguodala, three-pointer versus the Cavs last night. Let me share it with you.
Warriors ball in the front court, leading by 13. Iguodala gets a pass from Lee and hits the three. Andre Iguodala into the starting lineup has 22 points, 93-77 with 5.5 to go.
If you recognize that voice, that is ESPN Radio's Mike Tirico. All right. Well, Iguodala is kind of the center, Paul, of a really interesting story. Steve Kerr getting a lot of props for last minute changing his mind about the starting lineup. And what's really funny is in interviews before the game, he said he's sticking with the same lineup. And then he later said, morale isn't how you win games or whatever, or don't hand you trophies. So he didn't feel bad about lying. He knew all along he was going to change the lineup. And it's an interesting story about how he got there. And it kind of goes to show you what kind of guy Steve Kerr, the coach of the Warriors, is. So apparently, a guy who used to work for the Suns, right? He was in the video department at the time, or?
Yeah, he was video coordinator when he left. He came in as an assistant video coordinator.
Okay, so this is Nick Yuron we're talking about. He's one of the many that are with the Warriors that has the Suns connection. So apparently, the night before the game, he was watching some video from the 2014 finals involving the Spurs. He picked up something on there of, I think it was after game 3, Pop changed the lineup, went smaller. I think he subbed D off for, I think it was Splitter.
For Splitter, right.
Splitter, right. So he sees this and he thinks, that was really effective. He texts Luke Walton, who is an assistant coach on the Warriors, and says, maybe this is something the Warriors want to try for game 4. Walton goes ahead and passes this message on, sends a text to Kerr at 3 in the morning saying, hey, you know, Nick Yuron had this idea. What do you think about it? And that was basically the impetus for what Kerr, why he changed the lineup. And I just wanted your reaction to that, because you knew him when he was with the Suns, right?
Well, the circle of people, those of us who have known Nick, aren't as surprised as everybody else about this. Everybody else looks at, and he's this guy, he's 28 years old.
Right.
He went to Tempe McClintock here, great kid, went to University of San Diego after that, and that's where his connection with Steve Kerr started, because Steve Kerr's lived in San Diego and his son wound up playing at USD, and he was a manager there. And so he's kind of always brought him along, and he brought him into the Suns, and his role grew quickly. And he's just a really sharp guy. You couldn't find a person in the world that says a bad thing about him. But the biggest thing is he's a rising star. And when, you know, unfortunately here, Kerr left after the conference final season, so then he worked for Lance Blanks, and then he worked for Ryan McDonough when he came in. But when Kerr got this job at Golden State, there was, you know, he was putting people around him that he really felt good about. You could see, you know, on his staff, Bruce Frazier, former U of A guy, Luke Walton, former U of A guy, Alvin Gentry, his coach in Phoenix. But he also tabbed Nick, and Nick was a video coordinator in Phoenix at the time, and, you know, was not under any contract, so the Suns didn't have any ability to hold on to him, and he made him, kind of created this title of special assistant to the head coach. And
wow, okay, so that's his title with the Warriors now, okay.
But he's probably a rising GM in the league. In fact, when he left, I said this guy's a rising star. He's only 28, but he's going to do things, and just the fact that he's constantly throwing things out there like that to be, and that says a lot about the environment Steve Kerr has created there, that somebody like Nick, who doesn't have this vast NBA resume that Steve Kerr does, feels okay with throwing something out there that might get rejected.
Right.
But he knows that they're open to the ideas.
That is amazing, and it does. It says a lot about that culture there, a very positive one. We're going to have Mark Stein, ESPN Insider, coming up in a little bit. We're going to have to ask him about that. And Iguodala, kind of the center of that story, 22 points he had in the game. I think he hit 4 3-pointers. Had a swagger about him on the court, too. I thought that was really interesting. But he was willing to say after the game, it's just not about him scoring. There's others.
Our team has been really good at just letting it flow. And whoever's night it is, that's the guy's night. But the majority of time is Steph, just because he is who he is. And he's going to do that no matter where he's at.
That was Andre Iguodala talking about the Warriors' 103-82 win. And they just look like the Warriors of old that everybody thought was going to win this game. And Kerr, again, we're talking about sort of that culture he created and the success. Paul, when you were around him with the Suns, obviously it was in a different capacity, a GM. It kind of ended in a sour situation. I know he's since talked about sort of his relationship with D'Antoni at the time. Anything jump out about you, about him to you, that led you to believe something like this could happen? Or?
Well, he kind of fell into the GM role. It wasn't something he ever wanted to do. He was always a coach at heart. In fact, that was kind of the friction between him and D'Antoni early, that he went into office after a loss and was making suggestions about posting Amari Stoudemire up, and that's where they butted heads there. And he learned from that process, too, and probably has known how to handle his relationship better with the GM. Two big things about Steve Kerr takeaways from being around him a great deal is, one, he's a great people person. He communicates with all people, and everybody knows this from watching him on TNT, just how great of an analyst he was to communicate to all levels. But he does that on a personal basis, too, and that's how, you have guys like Nick that he gains trust in, or, you deal with a managing partner like Robert Sarver. All people, he could kind of buffer those lines. And then the other side is, he's a tremendous competitor. Like, he comes off as Opie and this super nice guy and wouldn't say a bad word or anything. But that guy, the first time I saw him as a head coach was in Summer League this past summer, because he was out there to get to know the job and the whole staff was out there to do it. And he's out there on the court yelling at a ref who's probably a D-League ref about some guy on his team that won't be on the roster come fall. And getting a technical in the summer league gym in front of about 300 people. But he's passionate about the job, and he can lie to you too very well.
Clearly,
I found that out about night of the supposed Steph Curry trade. He denied any possibility that night that was true as I was reporting it.
And a good poker face as he did it.
Yeah, and I'm just dying there in a room of press room of fellow reporters as he says there's no truth to it.
Well, it's like he said after the game about they don't hand you a trophy based on morality, so I guess he's willing to sort of move on with that. I've been really impressed, and talking about the Spurs last season and Popovich, I actually see some similarities in their organizations. Obviously, probably very different styles of coaching, and Popovich has a very gruff manner. But one thing that has been explained about that Spurs organization to me in the past is kind of everyone is on the same page from top to bottom. And while we see one side of Pop, he communicates what's important to him very well throughout the organization, and it's like a family. And you sense that's the same thing with the Warriors and Kerr, that there's great communication. And especially, if you're listening to a guy, maybe he's not as experienced as some other guys, it says a lot about him. So
they just do, and they've done a lot of different things to make players comfortable. Like at their shoot-arounds, they play music. I don't know that any of the NBA team does it, but they have music blasting in, and it's like a mix of everybody's different tastes, and it just brings a different spirit about the whole organization. And I can't imagine any player on that team. I mean, to handle the roster like he's had, like a guy like David Lee, who's been an all-star in his career and a starter his whole career at a primary role, and then all of a sudden he's out of the rotation, but then in the past two games, Steve Kerr comes to him and he needs him, and he's that guy again. That's coaching right there.
Killing Suns fans listening to all this, because all these connections to the Suns past, and it's just such a different organization. All right, that is Paul Coro. I am Paula Bovin. We are from AZ Central Sports. We're filling in for Brad Sussmat. Remember, we're streaming live on sports360az.com and azcentralsports.com. A couple of great topics coming up. In a little while, we're going to talk about the Coyotes. I want to discuss some of this arena speculation. I got some information I want to talk about. But coming up next, a friend of both of ours, he's tapped in as good as anybody on the NBA insider from ESPN, Mark Stein, will be joining us here on the Brad Sussmat Show.
Like our Facebook fan page for unique Arizona sports content from the high schools to the pros. Facebook.com/sports360az.
Hi, welcome back to the show. This is Paul Coro of AZ Central Sports, co-hosting today with AZ Central Sports' Paula Bovin. We're filling in for Brad Sussmat here on Sports 360 AZ. And we're happy to welcome in ESPN NBA writer Mark Stein, who was gracious enough to have a layover in Phoenix just so that he could talk to us locally on his way to Game 5 of the NBA Finals. Mark, hi, how you doing?
Just how I drew it up. You figured it out.
Well, did you think you would be sitting here at 2-2 at this point in the series, given what the Cavs had going into it?
No, I'm one of the geniuses who at 1-0 and Kyrie Irving out said this thing is over. We'll be lucky to see a game five. So I don't even know why you guys want to talk to me, because I've been way off. But last night finally looked more like the series we were expecting. And, you know, the Cavs, you know, LeBron was due to come back to earth, obviously, because of the load he's carrying and the guys around him. And that whole team looked like it was on fumes last night. So can they rally here in this two-day break? I guess we'll see. But, I mean, they've been stretched thin beyond reason at this point.
Well, and that was what I was going to ask you, Mark. Cleveland, I think, had 12 points in the fourth quarter. They were two for 18. Is this, you think, indicative of what's to come with Irving out, with Love out? Is this just a different team that maybe in its final games in this series can't keep up the same energy level?
Well, the only reason I'm hesitant to say that is just because I and many others have been so wrong trying to forecast this thing. So, look, this is going to be the only the last two-day break that either team gets in this series. So you would think that LeBron and some of his teammates are going to come back looking a lot fresher in this game five. And then it's just tough turnarounds after that. You know, everybody has to fly back to Cleveland for game six. And, you know, if you watched ESPN at all yesterday, you saw Chris Broussard going through the off day and between games routine that LeBron has to go through just to get himself going right now. So game five is probably their best shot to get back in this series, and I think Cleveland can probably take heart from the fact that, bizarrely, Steph Curry has shot the three ball much better on the road in the playoffs than he has at home. Going into last night, he was 50% from the three-point line on the road and 34% from the three-point line at home, and had another 4-for-7 showing last night. So maybe the Cavs can steal another one. I think we're all a little skeptical, because, you know, you see LeBron is just carrying an insane load. I mean, if he, you know, everybody has rightly been saying if the Cavs could win this thing, this would be his crowning achievement, because when do we remember a star player in the finals without his second, third, or fourth best teammate? It just doesn't happen like that.
Yeah, and I agree, your point about the days off in between are just huge, especially when it's two. But this series sort of has the feel to me as the same pattern as the Memphis series and what Memphis tried to do to Golden State. Am I wrong there? Do you feel a correlation there where, and then the Warriors finally figured it out and got more into their thing as the Grizz lost players and lost their depth?
The big difference, the only big difference is LeBron, is that Memphis obviously has nobody like LeBron for Golden State to contend with, and you know, we all know there's only one LeBron. There's just nobody like him. But, you know, Steve Kerr, someone you guys both know well, someone you guys have both covered closely, you know, he made a real gutsy move yesterday to just basically start Iguodala, which is something he hasn't wanted to do all his season long, and fully commit to small ball, knowing that, you know, Mozgov tortured them inside, exactly what they feared would happen. But it's a trade-off that they feel like they had to make at this point, because to them, it's really their offense that was broken. Everybody was talking about the crazy numbers LeBron was putting up, but to the Warriors, it's more about that their offense just wasn't functioning properly, and you get Lee on the floor as an extra playmaker, a guy who knows Steph Curry so well and plays off him so well, and they do look much, much better offensively. But that's, you know, you guys know Steve. He wasn't afraid to roll the dice as a GM, and he hasn't been afraid to roll the dice as a coach.
We're talking with ESPN insider Mark Stein. We're filling in for Brad Sussman here on Sports 360 AZ. I wanted to ask you about Kerr, and obviously he's got a great team, Mark, and great pieces and great shooters and everything else, but what has impressed you about the job he's done this season? You feel sort of like there's a better culture around the Warriors that maybe he's created.
You know what it is? It really feels like the Suns from the Steve Nash heyday as far as their culture. It's just such a positive group, and Steve is so willing to share credit. I mean, the story was going around last night that Nick Yuren, who was also in Phoenix, you know, someone who works with Steph Curry on the floor every day, but by no means is one of the assistants who's used to grabbing headlines, that he was the one who initially suggested the change to start Iguodala. And just the fact that everybody would so openly admit that, it's just indicative of the kind of closeness that they have. But it really, being around, you know, I've really been lucky. I've been around the Warriors for weeks. I've been covered them really throughout the whole playoffs, and it really reminds me of the Suns' glory days. You know, Alvin Gentry's at the heart of it too, and you know, Alvin is just such a great storyteller and a guy who always makes it fun. But there's really, this whole series is kind of like, you know, it's a tribute to Mike D'Antoni. I think David Griffin, the Cavs GM, counted up that there are 11 people on both sides who have deep, deep ties to the Suns' Nash heyday. So it's very reminiscent to me of what those Suns teams were about. And they were also, you know, even though they've somehow found a way to lose in the playoffs in the most excruciating fashion year after year after year, they always kept it fun, and there was a lightness about the group, and Golden State has that, and I can tell you from going around the league that not a lot of teams have it. I mean, it's a really good group that enjoys each other's company.
If it reminds you of it, imagine the excruciating pain of the Suns fans watching this. I mean, it's got D'Antoni touches all over the offense, and like half of that Warrior staff is off of the conference finals team of 2010 for the Suns. So speaking of that, it's been 5 years since the Suns have been in the playoffs. And what do you think, is there a chance for them to get back in that mix, or are they close in your eyes? What would they need to do?
I mean, the problem they have is just you're in the West, and it's, you know, just getting in is so hard. So I don't, you know, even though they have some nice pieces there, and I'm a big Jeff Hornacek fan, I mean, I can't say that they're close. You know, they're going to need, you know, the jury's still out on the Dragic trade. You know, I guess they felt like they had to do it because they were going to lose him, and they felt painted into a corner. But, you know, other moves are going to happen there. You know, Bledsoe can be a very good cornerstone piece. I think that guy has a lot of potential. And I really wasn't surprised when he got the money he did, because I think he would have gotten something similar on the open market. But I think I would be misleading the listeners if I threw the close word around.
I just heard about a million hearts breaking out there, Mark. Nice job. I wanted to actually have you expand on Bledsoe a little bit, because as talented as he is, I sense with this community there's still a little bit of sort of a division about how they feel about him, maybe because he's not more vocal or said things he wanted. What impresses you so much about him?
well, as an athlete, I mean, he you know, when he's at his peak, he can be a dangerous two-way player. And, you know, you guys would know better than me, but maybe is some of that a function of, you know, Goran Dragic, you know, grew up in Phoenix, left and came back, and so I'm, the affinity and kind of the closeness, I'm guessing, that he had with Suns fans. People were probably upset when he left, and it all happened so quick. I mean, it was a matter of days. You know, they, you know, Dragic's unhappiness kind of spills into the public. They meet, and he's traded a few days later, and just like that, you know, Nash's understudy is gone. So I don't know if maybe the hesitation on Bledsoe stems from that a little bit. I mean, the Suns do have picks to trade, and, you know, I still see Phoenix as a destination that players would want to go. I mean, you know, I thought of going through the airport this morning. Why don't I get to come here more? I miss coming here. So, I think people still think of Phoenix as a great place to be. It's just in the West, I mean, that's the difference. In the East, you're only one good trade away from real contention. And in the West, it might take two.
Mark, good stuff. And despite what Paul Coro says about you, I'm thrilled about where your career has gone. Mark and I started a long time ago, sort of in the same area. So Los Angeles Daily News. Mark, thanks for joining us. I know you're on a plane. I really appreciate it.
You are two of my favorites. Catch up with you soon.
I just wish you had got the sweep so you'd get back to being a proud soccer dad. Thanks for joining us, Mark.
Thanks, Mark. Paul Coro, Paula Bovin filling in for Brad Sesmat here on Sports 360 AZ. We're going to continue our talk about the Suns, what they might do in the draft. I'm going to pick Paul Coro's brain just a little bit if I can find anything in there. Brad Sesmat Show, Sports 360 AZ. Catchy little music there, isn't it? This is the Brad Sesmat Show. Of course, I'm not Brad Sesmat. I am Paula Bovin, AZ Central Sports. Joined, I am lucky today, by AZ Central Sports' Paul Coro. Talking a lot of things, including hoops. It was great listening to Mark Stein, ESPN Insider, because he's so tapped in. And what was interesting to me during that interview is it sounded a little like Seth Curry had a possible chance to end up with the Suns at some point, Paul. I kind of interpreted that from what you were talking about with him.
Yeah, well, the one time we had been lied to before by Kerr was on draft night when they had a deal in place for the Golden State pick in Steph Curry's draft class. And the Suns front office bursted in celebration when the Timberwolves wrongly selected Johnny Flynn instead of Steph Curry. And they thought they had their guy. They thought they had their next star in Steph Curry. And little did they know at the time that the Warriors were going to backtrack off the deal once they knew Curry was still on the board. They never expected him to be there. So they withdrew it, and before that, when they still thought they had him, Kerr came into the press conference and denied any trade or that something was in the works at all.
Oh, man. That's another thing. Suns fans, just don't reflect on that or you're going to be really depressed. All right, we're going to have a draft coming up here soon, an NBA draft. I'm going to reveal Paul Coro's latest mock draft pick for the Suns in a minute. A lot of ways they can go, but there's a lot of needs on the Suns, you know. I don't know. I'm not convinced there's a certain position they should draft. Maybe they should draft more on best player available.
Yeah, that's usually their tactic too. And when you don't make the playoffs, as they say, you could use help just about anywhere. And 13 is a tough spot, as Suns fans know. They've been stuck in that middle ground for several drafts now. And sometimes you get Earl Clark, and sometimes you get T.J. Warren. You know, but at best you're probably getting a role player there, unless you strike lucky and get the Kawhi Leonard types. So. But I think, you know, what they have there, and especially for their greater needs, and, you know, they need some help up front. The only guys under contract coming back are Alex Len and Markieff Morris as far as big men. So they could use some size and depth there and help on the boards. And where they're picking, there's a pretty good wealth of big men in that mock draft that you mentioned, which is to be mocked, surely.
we'll start right now.
I had Miles Turner from Texas come to them, which is a little bit odd right now, because he's probably the one guy of this group that hasn't worked out for them. He's doing a group workout that the Suns will be at today, in fact, and I think it's in California. And but he's that 6'10", rangy big man who's athletic and can be a stretch four because he shoots it well. Just the odd thing with him is he's got this weird running style. It's okay. Kind of an odd gait that people wonder is going to be a problem with his knees. And so you really would have liked their trainers and staff to look at him. They did get that chance in Chicago a little bit, but they'd like it here. So other big man would be like Frank Kaminsky, who would be hugely popular.
My favorite, yeah, absolutely.
He could be there. Trey Lyles, don't know that if he's dynamic enough. He played a little bit out of position at Kentucky as a three, but he's really a four, so it's a little bit hard to figure out. And if not a big man, a shooter like Devin Booker could be there. The Suns were the worst three-point shooting team in the league after the break, and with the way they play, they could really use a shooter.
You know, one of the guys I've seen move kind of up and down and a little bit more down lately, and I'm not sure why, is Stanley Johnson from Arizona. I'm wondering if there's any chance he could fall to 13 to the Suns, if that would be too low. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm amazed, and you know more about Stanley's game from covering more U of A than me, but just from watching him and seeing him at the combine, that he could be slip out of the top 10. That would really startle me. I'm not sure what the knock on is. I think some people think his offensive game is a little wild.
Right.
But, you know, that's his best trait. He's a freight train coming downhill every time on a break, and he's got an NBA body that's already ready to go. He can make an instant impact for somebody, and he's serious about the game. He's confident. He at the combine, he told us he's the best player in the draft.
I remember that. I loved watching him at Arizona. It was definitely a work in progress, especially at the beginning, because he was a guy so dominating in high school. He would just create his own shots and make his own decisions as he learned more to be a ball distributor and things like that. But gosh, the upside on this guy, and I know that's the thing the guy, you know, people in the NBA way, do you go a four-year guy who's more refined, or do you go with the upside of a guy like Johnson? But he just seems like there's so much more room for him to grow and be such an impact player.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if he slips past, like Miami's at 10, and he would be such a good fit there as a player. But if he happened to be there at 13, that's a gold mine for the Suns. And they've been in this position before where they had a chance to take Kawhi Leonard when he slipped and they passed. And so that was a different brass than now, and I can't imagine this one would do the same thing.
Well, we don't know what the Coyotes are going to do. That's an ever-changing story, especially with, you know, Glendale voting on Wednesday to terminate that 15-year, $225 million agreement. It has turned very ugly. Interesting thing that came out today was Mayor Stanton of Phoenix saying the team is going to pursue conversations with the city of Phoenix, and it sounded like they've actually had some conversations, the Coyotes in Phoenix, about what to do if things don't happen or go in the right direction with Glendale. There's a lot of speculation now, Paul, with the Suns, the team you cover. Robert Sarver has said on record he thinks the organization needs a new arena. There is talk that maybe down the road these two teams could share an arena, that possibly the Coyotes could move into the Suns arena for a while until new arena is built. There's been speculation. I think Brad Sesmat was the first to mention this possibility of something happening in Scottsdale, and maybe the Native American community there might help out with an arena at Talking Stick. A lot of directions this could go. I think people are surprised to hear Sarver wants a new arena. You've been to a bunch of arenas, obviously, in the NBA, Paul. Is this one ready to, either be knocked down or to be changed?
They do need a plan in place to start developing one. I think right now it's the sixth oldest arena in the NBA. They've done a fantastic job of keeping it modern over the years. You know, you just look at that glass pavilion on the front and the glass offices that give it a whole different look on the outside and inside. They've created things like theater boxes and updated the suites and concourse changes. But, you can only do so much. You know, they keep trying to keep it updated, but at some point, to get the type of arena revenue that other teams get, they're going to have to build a new one. And it was a strange time. He hasn't publicly gone and asked for it yet. At some point, they're probably going to need something with public funding. And when you're a team that hasn't made the playoffs for 5 years, that's a difficult time to go public and ask for that.
Sure.
As far as just reputation of the organization. But I think this could be the impetus to go to that. Now, if you're not just asking for yourself, but if you're asking for something that will keep the NHL team in the city, I think it would be received differently publicly.
No question. And, what Stanton said, what we're hearing from the Coyotes, I mean, this could be just political posturing, and everything stays on course in Glendale, depending on what happens in the courts now. But you have to look at, just because of what we talked with the Suns, and let me remind people, so that the Suns Arena was U.S. Airways Center was built at the time 1992. It cost $90 million. Arenas now are going for about $400 or $500 million is what it takes. It takes about 2 years to build. I'm just kind of setting the stage if something like this would happen. And, you know, usually they're a combination of private funds, public funds, some sponsorship money. I think that U.S. Airways Center got a fair amount from initially their sponsorship money. But when you're talking $400 or $500 million, you're talking of like what happened with the Diamondbacks. They had that, I think it was a quarter-cent tax that resulted in a lot of money, but it was approved through the Board of Supervisors without going to a public vote. That ticked a lot of people off. So the funding is going to have to be an issue. And I don't know a ton about arenas, but I would imagine if there is two professional sports teams involved, that it could make more financial sense for the sports team. And there's plenty of arenas around the NBA, NHL where they share, and it seems to work fine despite the overlapping schedules. I mean,
it would be, this is obviously way down the road, but right. It would be interesting to see how they divvied up the rights to that arena,
right?
Because right now, one of the best things for the Suns about U.S. Airways Center is they have the operational rights for things like concerts and things like that to make the money off of. So how does that get divided if there's two tenants? You always hear it in Staples Center, there's a hierarchy. It goes Lakers, Kings, then Clippers.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
As far as who gets who runs the arena. So, but the thing that Brad reported about the Talking Stick site, that kind of makes sense when it's about to become Talking Stick Arena,
right?
Or Talking Stick Resort Arena. I better start learning how to say that.
Yeah, I know. No, exactly. Right.
But I've also heard that, you know, the old convention center, could be leveled for a new arena. You know, there's been areas around there that are parking lots or lots where buildings have been raised. So there's areas downtown that something could happen to. But it's, in the meantime, the Suns at least have made what they have work for them. I don't think anybody who goes into U.S. Airways Center says, man, this place is a dump.
Not at all. They've, like you said, they've upgraded concourses and things like that. And it's a pleasant place to go see a game now. But I think it's not less about experience as it is about revenue stream. It's those suites.
Right.
I hear those suites make a big chunk of the revenue. Those are a big difference.
Yeah.
High end. And
every arena does it differently. I go to arenas where there's maybe two layers of suites around the middle.
Right.
In Atlanta, all the suites in the upper deck fill up the upper deck on one side, and then there's no suites on the other. There's a club in
sure.
the building. You know, there's in Cleveland, I don't know if you know, you can notice on TV, but there's courtside boxes
right.
that are like little suites right next to the bench on courtside instead of chairs there. I mean, every place has its own unique feel. And even the arenas that look fine, you know, like in Milwaukee, they're just about to build. They finally got it approved there to build a new arena. And that's about the same age as U.S. Airways Center. By the time they build that street in Milwaukee is going to have three arenas in a row on it.
Unbelievable. It's unbelievable. And then, you know, you got guys like Jerry Jones when they're building their stadiums. They have like go-go dancers and stuff going on. I'm hopeful this kind of thing won't happen here in Phoenix with a new arena. So. All right, we're going to get into detail about some movies, though, now. Coming up just shortly with Bill Goodykoontz, who is our AZ Central Chief Film and Media Critic. There's some good stuff coming out. Well, Jurassic World, actually. I think I read his review. Maybe he doesn't think it's such good stuff. Testament of Youth and a couple other things. And I'm also going to pick his brain a little bit about ESPN's three-man NBA Finals crew, because I know people really debate about on-air talent. So I'm Paula Bovin. That is Paul Coral, AZ Central Sports. We are filling in for Brad Sussmat on the Brad Sussmat Show. Remember, we stream live on Sports 360. AZ.com and azcentralsports.com. And coming up, Goody at the Movies.
For in-depth, unique coverage from the high schools to the pros, follow us on Twitter at Sports360AZ.
Wow, you know you're important if you're getting that kind of introduction. We didn't get anything like that, Paul Coral. We just got this little cheesy radio music. It was good, though, but... All right, that is Paul Coro. I am Paula Bovin, AZ Central Sports. We are filling in for Brad Sussmat. We are streaming live, sports360az.com and azcentralsports.com. And I am honored to welcome our next guest, AZ Central Chief Film and Media Critic Bill Goodykoontz. I'm dying to hear about Jurassic World. I'm getting very mixed signals from my friends. Bill Goodykoontz, what do you think?
You For one thing, you need to aim higher if you're honored to talk to me.
I'll try.
Yeah. The other is, I mean, you guys should get like a theme from Rocky or something.
Yeah, I like it.
That'd be kind of cool. I didn't like it very much. I thought the Jurassic World, I thought it was, the story is just so stupid, and it really wastes a really good cast. And I know, yeah, it sounds ridiculous to say, yeah, there's this movie where these giant dinosaurs are all running around, and it's really just not very realistic, but that's not what I mean. I just mean they didn't even try to make, like, an interesting story. And yes, the dinosaurs are kind of cool, although I have to say I have spent the morning fending off readers who have not yet seen the movie, by the way, telling me that I need to lighten up and that, you know, I'm looking for too much. But I like the big, dumb, bad movies, and I like blockbusters. It's not like that. It's not like some, you know, elitist thing or anything. Like, hey, God, you guys know me. I'm not elite at all. I mean,
No, I've seen you play basketball.
Oh.
But they... But they, you know, it's at least try a little, you know? It's like, David, you should not, in a movie like this, you probably should not root for the bad dinosaur.
To me, the premise was even off. Like, why would this park even be created again after what happened in the first one?
Well, one of my favorite things, there's this actor named Jack Johnson who shows up in a lot of stuff. He's really funny in kind of an understated way. And he's like one of the tech guys that has... As you can imagine, they have all this great technology to try to keep these things in check and to, you know, kind of monitor them and see where everybody's at and all. And he's one of the guys who kind of runs that part of it. And he's wearing an original Jurassic Park T-shirt. and Bryce Dallas Howard, who is just like the most cliched ice queen you've ever seen in your life in this movie. And she's like, do you think that maybe it might be in bad taste to wear that shirt around here? And he's like, oh, yeah, I know. People die. It's probably bad. He's like, I won't do it again next time. No, but he is involved. This movie does have one of the best non-romantic romantic scenes ever, and I don't want to give anything away. It's probably not worth, you know, however much it costs to go see it in IMAX to get that, but it is really fun, and he's involved in it. Well, but I just spent some time on Facebook answering some woman who said that this movie is intentionally bad, that they made it bad, they made it horrible because it's aimed at millennials who saw the original when they were young, and dissecting it as they get older has been part of their culture and part of their experience and something they enjoy. So basically what she's saying is the studio spent hundreds of millions of dollars to make a really bad movie so that millennials would have something to compare and contrast and complain about. And I put
it on Sci-Fi with Sharknado.
Exactly. I mean, I know that millennials sometimes have this unfair rep of, you know, like being spoiled and wanting to be catered to and all that stuff, and they think it's all about them. Every generation has that. Oh, my God, baby boomers think it's still all about them. But I think that this Facebook exchange may be, like, a good example of, like, why some of that may be true.
What about Chris Pratt in this sort of major role, leading guy in this big, you know, expensive film? How does he do?
Well, he's kind of like the guy in Guardians of the Galaxy, but not fun. It's like, take that guy and have him be... You know, kind of rolls with the punches and does stuff. He's just a stereotype, but he's this guy that they hired from the Navy to, and his big job is the Velociraptors who were so mean in the first one. By the way, you can forget the second and third movies because they're not brought up at all in this. But they, and probably that's a good thing.
Yeah, really.
But his big thing is he's training Velociraptors, kind of like, not quite like dogs. Think of trying to tame, like, kind of like Siegfried and Roy or something like that. I mean, like they're still really dangerous, and they'll eat you if they got the chance. But he gets out there with them, and he's trying to teach them how to, like, you know, just sort of, I don't know what the point of that is, even. I mean, I don't know why they're doing that, but they're trying to, like, get them to follow commands and all this stuff. And Vincent Dorf, now I can never say his name, he's, like, again, a cartoon bad guy. And his big mission is he wants to weaponize these things and make them, like, super soldiers. And then we can, like, win all these wars and stuff. And Chris Pratt is the guy that's like, no, that's a bad idea. They're animals. They're not – they're born in – what is the great line? They're born in test tubes, but they don't know that. It's like, well, okay. They've got, like, little pea-brain dinosaur heads or whatever. They don't know anything.
Well, Goody, let's also ask you about another film that's – probably not getting the hype, but I assume will be much better, is Testament of Youth. It's a World War II memoir, and I'm really interested in Alicia Vikander. She seems to be the new hot thing after what she did in Ex Machina, and she's in this one too.
She's in about 15 movies this year, but she's in the upcoming Man from U.N.C.L.E. too. She's great in it. It's a movie. It's based on this woman's Britton is her last name, Vera Britton. She wrote this. World War One to the United States is kind of like we usually treat it in history, sort of like a warm up to World War Two. But in Europe, I mean, it was this devastating thing that like changed the way they thought about themselves and and the way they thought about the world. And so you get a lot of these really good movies from Britain about World War One, and she's in this, and she plays Vera Britton, who was going to go to Oxford, and she did go to Oxford, and her brother and this guy that she falls in love with, like all these other people, enlist in the war, and they're like, ah, it's going to be short, it's going to be fun, this will be great, and it turns out to be anything but. And it's really good, and she's great. And she's obviously, she plays Eve the android in Ex Machina, and she's great in that, but she's obviously in totally different ways. And she's, here, this is like this, costume drama period thing, but she's just cool. I really like those kind of characters, whether it's a man or a woman, whether it's an action movie or something like this, where they just kind of roll with the flow, bad things happen and they just kind of get up and go to work anyway, like most of us are supposed to do. And I find something sort of like, silently heroic about those people because they do the stuff they're supposed to, like we're all supposed to do.
People are so divided about movies, but they're also really divided about on-air sports talent. I'm wondering, as a guy, I know, Goody, you like sports, you've watched TV. What do you think of the NBA Finals crew of Mike Breen, Van Gundy, and Mark Jackson?
I used to watch sports on TV for a living.
Yes, you did.
And if I was still doing that, I think I would give him not such great grades. I think Breen's okay. He's not Marv Albert, but who is? And they, I hope the millennial person isn't listening. But I sound I sound so old. But he's fine. He's vanilla. He doesn't really get in the way. He knows how to, call play by play. Van Gundy knows a lot, but he's just so bizarre. And it's like he's trying to be weird. He's trying to be Barkley or something. He'll come up. I was watching the game one day, and within about 5 minutes, he came up with it must have been three or four bizarre rule changes that he thought would be cool, So they ought to get rid of that. You know what they also ought to do? They ought to do this. And it's like, what? Why are you sitting there saying this? Tell me something I can use here,
But he's also made some crazy basketball analysis. Like at the end of one of the games, he was suggesting that they miss both free throws to basically avoid the Warriors shooting a three-pointer.
And LeBron cutting his head open might fire him up, Or it also might daze him and make him But and then Mark Jackson,
he's terrible.
Mark Jackson again, he's just like one of those guys. Mark Jackson, I'm sure, as they say, has forgotten more basketball than I will ever know. But you would not know it by listening to him because he's sort of limited to this thing where all he gets to say is Golden State really needs to stop here. It's like, well, no kidding.
That man.
You know the team with the fewest turnovers is likely to win this game. Well, great. thanks, man. This guy's making more in a year than I will make in my entire life to just spout these obvious things. I bet, if you sat around, it would be fun. I bet you a blast to sit at a bar and have a few beers and watch a game with those guys and have them do it that way. Because then I think they'd be loosened up. They kind of have that. Breen, I think, especially has a little bit of that Mike Tirico Monday Night Football thing where he's honored by this institution and he has to treat it with reverence and respect. And to the extent that you were ever supposed to do that, which I don't think you were, sure, it's great, it's fun, it's a big business, but it's a game. And it ought to be treated as such on some level. And I think they're just, he wants to take it too seriously. Van Gundy, I have no idea what he's trying to do. And Mark Jackson is just over there saying black is black, white is white, the ball is orange. I don't know.
Yeah, he's just not adding anything. And Van Gundy, to me, just tries like he's trying to be something he's not. And the guys that are the best, like the guys you see on TNT, they're being themselves. So
they're trying to be the TNT guys.
Yeah,
is what I think,
that's right.
Because they know that works. And I'm sure they've got producers in their ear telling, I'm sure in Van Gundy's earpieces, be weird, man, say that thing we talked about, that stupid, crazy thing, I don't know what they tell Mark Jackson. tell them that LeBron wears 23. You know, yeah. I don't know.
My problem with Mark Jackson is he's supposed to be the analyst who's critical of things going on, but we all know that Steve Kerr is a better coach than him, or they wouldn't be in the finals. So why would we listen to anything he has to say?
Credibility issue there, yeah.
But in fairness, that puts him in an impossible spot. I mean, what's he supposed to do? I mean, you know, I guess he could just, like, pick on every move Steve Kerr makes. You know, now Kerr comes out and speaks a lot about his lineup. Maybe he can get something out of that. I don't know. Well, at least I never lied, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Goody, I want to sneak this question in because I've been meaning to do it and I forgot. Hey, do you know anything about this Lifetime movie that Kristen Wiig and what's his name? The very funny man. Will Ferrell. Yeah, they're coming out with. And, you know, they supposedly it wasn't going to happen, and now it's going to debut on Lifetime in a couple weeks. It's got to be a spoof, right? It's not like a real cheesy Lifetime movie.
Well, aren't all Lifetime movies kind of spoofs?
Yeah, well, I guess you're right. A Deadly Adoption, it's called.
They're like with women in peril, you know, like kind of thing. They, it started out that evidently, you know, who knows what's true and what's not, but they, we should ask Steve Kerr. But they, they started out and they said, we're going to do this thing. Or no, first it was supposed to be this big top secret thing. Then they came out, it kind of leaked. They're going to do this thing that was not necessarily a spoof. It was trying to accept that all those things are a little bit. So they're trying to do this movie and, you know, whatever. And then they did not like that it got leaked. So they said, you know what? It was all a joke. It was, you know, it was a bit. We were just, you know, it was just something we were floating. We thought it was funny. That turns out that's not true. So they they've made this movie and they're going to show it in a week or two. And they, who knows what it will be. I mean, I've got to believe it'll be the most watched Lifetime movie since, you know, like, Divorcee in Peril or something, you know, or whatever. I don't know. I haven't actually, since I was a TV, I haven't been a TV critic in a while, so I have not had to watch a Lifetime movie in a long time.
Is this like him just doing something off the wall, like when he did Casa de Mi Padre? Just,
I think so. And
don't right, expect.
Yeah. Yeah, and Wiig is great. Wiig is really great.
She's talented, yeah.
You should go check out this movie if it's still around, and I think it is, called Welcome to Me, where she plays this woman who is, I can't remember, she's bipolar, she's manic depressive, but whatever, she wins the lottery, and like one of those big lotteries, you know, and she, what she does with her money is she buys a TV show, and she's the host of it. And it's she's just great. It's really dark and really different for her. But I mean, then some of it's a little funny. But she's fantastic. And so I think it's cool that she's doing all this stuff. But I don't know. Will Ferrell can be an acquired taste a little bit. He's he's a good actor too. But sometimes he just kind of does the same thing over and over. I don't know. But again, I mean, the people are going to watch it. We're talking about it. When's the last time you even thought about a Lifetime movie?
All right. I watch them sometimes, okay? I'm making a confession here. I do. But they are so over the top that I can imagine this will only be at that level. All right, Goody, you can catch
like
his...
confession.
Yeah,
there's
I know.
A Lifetime channel?
Oh, yeah, like you don't know.
I don't know what it is on my TV.
There's two of them, I think. There's a movie, Lifetime movie, I think, and a Lifetime something. I don't know.
It's like when the NCAA tournament comes on. It's like, wow, that's a channel.
Where's True
on.
TV?
Yeah, I forgot I got True TV.
Oh, all right. That's Bill Goody Kunz. You can, of course, check all his great reviews, AZ Central Sports, or if you pick up the paper, of course, you can read it in there. Goody, thanks for joining us tonight. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Goody.
All right. Paul Coro, Paula Bovin, filling in for Brad Sesmet here on the Brad Sesmet Show. Remember, we're streaming live, sports360az.com, AZ Central Sports. We'll be back.